CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Vijay Vaitheswaran, the energy and green innovation editor of The Economist magazine and the host of the podcast To a Lesser Degree, highly recommended to follow the climate story as we go forward from COP26. Vijay, thank you for joining, because there are events in these last hours that require interpretation freshly. The announcement in the moment, China and the U.S., this is Bloomberg Green, vowed to work together to slow global warming, issuing a surprise joint statement that injects new momentum into the last days of global climate negotiations. The deal also marks a rare moment of cooperation between superpowers locked in geopolitical rivalry and who seemed at odds for most of the two-week talks. Does this, in some measure, reorganize the assumptions of COP26, or the alternative, promises? How to read this, Vijay? Good day to you.
Good day, John. Great to be with you. So the announcement between U.S. and China to cooperate more on climate, particularly on climate-related technologies like carbon capture and sequestration and some of these areas where the two countries are world-leading and can maybe learn from each other, help each other scale. I think it's got elements of the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good is that, of course, you want the two biggest emitters in the world working on the problem, committing to it. And these are areas, that is areas related to innovation, particularly, where both the U.S. and China are world-leading. And so that's good news. The bad part of it is, let's remember, the U.S. and China have a very fractured relationship in the Trump and post-Trump years. President Biden has not changed very many of the policies towards China. In fact, in terms of trade, in terms of the human rights question, we've continued, if not doubled down on, some of the policies that have made China more of a frenemy, if not enemy. And so the fact that there's a promise that we're going to get along and be nice on climate, meanwhile, the U.S. is going to take out a big club and beat up China on Xinjiang with the human rights and genocide issue, or on supply chains, or on other issues, to me seems unlikely. I'm glad they're trying. That'd be fantastic if they can compartmentalize. But that, you know, that's in my bad category. And the ugly category, this is a reminder that, in fact, this is a sideshow, right? This is a bilateral agreement at a multilateral get-together of almost 200 countries. It in some ways reveals the impotence or the lack of potential of getting global deals to solve these problems. That the UN approach, trying to get 200 countries to agree to something ambitious, is really hard, because just one spoiler, a country like Saudi Arabia, which is committed to oil, for example, or some of the other countries that are very committed to coal, can act as a spoiler. And indeed, this week, the U.S. refused to sign on to more aggressive targets on phasing out cars that use gasoline, for example, or on phasing out coal in a formal way through the UN process. But in the deal with China, we're able to see some agreements on innovation that might actually make a difference in the marketplace. So I call that ugly, because it actually exposes the weakness of the UN process.
How does this announcement comport with the earlier report, Bloomberg Green again? China signaled it's unlikely to join a global pledge to cut methane emissions, and said it's already doing enough to reduce greenhouse gases. The quote from Wang Yi, the senior negotiator for China at COP26, the U.S. keeps telling people to join it for new pledges, but without giving solutions about how to tackle methane. The question here is, does this new announcement take precedence over the earlier one? Because I'm told that methane is the much worse of the emissions gases, and that methane release is a curse that could accelerate the deterioration. So is China in or out of methane reduction?
Look, John, this is a complicated area where there's a lot of bogus information. So for our listeners, I just want to say a couple of points of fact. The first is, far and away, the most important greenhouse gas that contributes to climate change is carbon dioxide, right? This is released often from burning fossil fuels or industrial processes. It also is something that can be released naturally. The methane, which is the biggest component of natural gas, the fuel that we use in, to heat homes or industrial applications and so on, methane is more potent in the short term, up to 20 times as powerful as carbon dioxide, but it only lives a fraction of the life of the 100 years that carbon dioxide does. So we need to understand a bit of complexity. It's super important in the short term, and it can help a lot in the next 5, 10, 15 years, but the big kahuna when it comes to climate is really carbon dioxide. And when we actually look at where is the elephant in the room, it's China and coal, which releases a lion's share of greenhouse gases coming from China. So when I come back to the touchstone, China's the world's biggest emitter. It's the world's largest coal consumer and CO2 emitter, carbon dioxide emitter. How do you get China off of coal or to wind down its coal? A part of that answer is they need to switch to gas. That's how it's going to happen. They'll switch to renewables too, but they cannot substitute all that coal for windmills. It ain't going to happen. So if natural gas is going to be part of China's decarbonization path, which will release some methane through some escaped pipes and so on, we should insist that they do a better job in making sure that natural gas is used responsibly with low leak rates and so on, and so that they can get off that coal. But forcing them into a straitjacket where they feel like they can't use any more gas would almost certainly guarantee that those coal plants will last a lot longer.
My puzzle here is that the United States and North America are a superpower when it comes to energy, especially natural gas. We have an abundance. We export it. There is natural gas in Europe and Russia as well. However, my understanding is that China is not rich in natural gas. Is that correct, Vijay?
You're absolutely right. In the conventional sense of being able to find it easily and use it, the way that Qatar in the Middle East, the way that Russia has vast quantities, the U.S. has gas we can get from our fracking operations, you're correct. Now, they have an expensive kind of methane they can make from their coal, a coal bed methane that's dirty, it's energy intensive. We don't want them to use that. So what we really want them to use is, if they're going to use gas, to get it piped in through the stoms, as it were, or get it from Russia, and there are efforts to do that, or to have it shipped in as liquefied natural gas, as cargoes on the high seas, as frozen gas, which is also happening in an increasing fashion.
India is part of the puzzle and the solution as well. Mr. Modi's government has committed to net zero by, I believe the year was 2070, but now an additional remark from India, from the government, that it needs a great deal of money. The number was $1 trillion, but that's a round number, in order to transition from the coal that now dominates its energy to what you just said, a mix of renewables and natural gas. Is that $1 trillion a real number? Is this a negotiation underway in the media?
This is a completely ridiculous number. There's no way that official sources are going to provide $1 trillion just for India. Let's be real about this. This is a political posture that Modi is striking. If you just look at the history of the leading economies of the G20, which promised $100 billion for all developing countries, and we haven't been able to meet that commitment yet, right? This is a promise that has gone broken. And only now at this UN summit, the COP, has there been an upgrade in that, so that we can sort of kind of, by cooking the books a little bit, claim that going forward, the rich world is going to give that $100 billion in promised money. That's for every emerging market, not just India. So how on earth is India alone going to get $1 trillion? So, it's posturing. Now, if you say, hey, India needs $1 trillion to pull off this in external financing, it can come from the private sector, from ESG pension funds, from BlackRock and other sources. Like, if you take a holistic view and say India needs a lot of capital from the world if it's going to transform its energy economy, now that's a sensible thing to say, and everybody would agree with that. That's different from saying we demand you give us $1 trillion or we're not going to act. And that's more of a negotiating tactic.
The final minute we have here, you have seen these COP26s before. This is the first time I've been able to report on it in depth. I'm told that the mood was positive. I'm told that there was joy in the march in the rain on Saturday night. I'm told that there's conversations about mitigation, about adaptation, and a lot of NGOs. How does this compare to previous events? We have about a minute, Vijay.
So you're right that there's been more positive outcomes from this COP than some had hoped for. And I can give some context. 20 years ago, I attended an important COP. It was called the Hague Summit in the Netherlands, where the U.S. negotiator had a pie thrown in his face And the administration of George W. Bush pulled America out of what was called the Kyoto Treaty at that time, the Kyoto Protocol, and the U.S. left in a huff from the U.N. process. So in contrast with some previous COPs, COP26, which just happened in Glasgow, is a moderate success, and that's a good thing. The wheels are still on the bus. That's what we need for this international process.
I'll take that as a win. Vijay Vajaswaran, the Energy and Green Innovation Editor for The Economist magazine and the host of To a Lesser Degree, the podcast. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.